listening to Female VC Lab, a podcast that showcases the journeys of female investors. My name is Barbara Bickham, and I am an award-winning CTO and VC that teaches companies and investors about emerging technology. I am sitting down with female VCs and investors to talk about their funds, how they invest, and how they make an impact. Welcome to the Female VC Lab podcast. I have Madhu here. Madhu, in one line, give me your name, your title, and the name of your fund.
Hey, Barbara, it's great to be here on this podcast. My name is Madhu Shalini Iyer. I'm a managing partner at Rocketship VC. We are a $275 million fund based out of the Valley, and we are investors investing globally in technology startups.
Wonderful. So tell me a little bit about how you became a venture capitalist or an investor.
Absolutely. This was by fluke and chance. I stumbled into something that I really love. I grew up across the globe, born in India, brought up there for a little bit, went to high school in Singapore, did my university in Sydney, Australia, finished electrical and computer science engineering, and the one place to go and come was the Valley. So I came here very early after I graduated and realized this is where I really find my appetite for tech and all other things that I loved from my childhood coming to life, and joined a startup here. Actually, it was not a startup. It was a science and engineering think tank by a bunch of Stanford folks. Joined it really early as a senior scientist. I was a scientist first and then a senior scientist. It was really in the data sciences group. And that was much before anybody was doing anything.
This is way before AI was any popular at all.
Totally. You know, and this was before
no one knew anything about that. We called it other things then.
They did call it other things.
We called it other things then.
Yeah, they called it like analytics. They called it like
databases. They called it data lakes. ETL. I still see that one. I said, oh, that's an old one.
That's right.
Called it data warehouses.
Absolutely. That's an old one. Oh, yeah. You know what? IT as well. Everything to do with IT.
IT, that's right.
Yeah. Started there, became an operator, helped build a few startups, started investing, and found myself getting more and more interested in the breadth of it, not just depth. So when you build something, you're totally just involved with one product.
Correct.
But as you start investing, you're looking at many products and many ideas. That gave me a lot of energy. And that's why I'm here building and investing in my own startups and now building a fund.
That's wonderful. So you talked a little bit about your thesis, but what is your thesis and what's the motivation behind your thesis?
We are a very differentiated fund, I'd like to think, because what our thesis is democratizing investing, VC investing.
Oh, and, I like that.
And the way we are doing that is that all of our deal flow doesn't come from bounds and like the Ivy Leagues or a certain sort of thesis that we have that we juxtapose. No, it actually comes bottoms up from data. And so we have the largest startup database in the world. We have assembled it. And since we are all computer scientists and data scientists, decided to go with data. And what that does is it just democratizes access to startups. We are not looking for a thing, or we're just looking for whatever the data tells us. And that's why we have become accidentally global investors. We are in the Valley, but we realized a long time back that there's action happening all across the globe, all across the US as well. And so we are everywhere where there's great startups being built.
I'm glad you brought up the data portion of what you do, because it's very important as venture capitalists, as investors, to look at these things. Oh, I'll ask you this. If you think about the hype and the exuberance around like AI and AI investing, it's interesting that you're like, okay, this data about these startups are going to inform how we invest. And you may have some in your portfolio And then there may be some where it's, this is just irrational exuberance versus some real startup meat.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we saw that. We saw that happening with AI. So we've stayed out of the AI sort of gold rush. Quite a lot, because what we saw was that startups very early on, just with an idea and just traction, we're getting valuations that are crazy. And that's, and really what you don't know and one doesn't know is that which of these startups are like, is there a need? Is this going to be taking over everything? What kinds of data and AI startups will be the eventual winners? And there,
correct.
AI is here to stay. I'm the first one to be exuberant about the technology, about what it can do for mankind and for all of us. But I'm also wary of, as an investor, I'm wary of sort of the exuberance around the valuations, around just money getting thrown on it. So we are cautious. We are cautiously optimistic. We are investing, but we are investing optimistically in companies that are not overhyped, if you will.
I think that's important. Because if you look at these waves of things, and I'll use VR as an example, VR had a big wave, like that was the first wave in 2010, right? They said everything's going to be in a VR headset. And then a lot of money was deployed from an investment perspective. And then I'm still waiting for the VR headset. And now they're going back to the glasses and some of these other kind of modalities that they had in the beginning. And then you look at that and you go, was that a wasted cycle of investment capital versus investing in something else?
Absolutely right. And I think that AI is obviously a bit more visceral than VR is an experience. AI can be deployed in a B2B realm. It is in a deep tech realm. It doesn't need to be the end product. It can power the end products.
Yes.
Omnipresent in every sector. You can have a fintech company with an overriding sort of component of AI. You can have a health sciences company that can have an overwhelming sort of AI component. So AI is omnipresent, and it is, and that is also true of actually VR and the promise of what it was. But yes. AI is a lot more visceral. But the thing is that I wouldn't say a lack of understanding of what the technology can bring and how it should be used, but there is a lot more exuberance about the sort of overall eventual outcome than the steps that one has to take. And there's a lot of people that were new to AI also throwing around a lot of.
That's very true.
That's a very big problem when that happens.
That's a huge problem. I think I agree with the lack of knowledge and understanding piece, because AI can be complex. There's many different pieces of AI. There's many different pieces of data. So around data that can empower AI. And I think like that lack of understanding of where is its real enablement capability, it reminds me a little bit, because I've also done blockchain as well, of that period as well. There was a lot of irrational exuberance and this is going to be the next thing. And I still have my blockchains and all, but the reality is a lot of capital was deployed there and there's very little things to see. It's nice to invest in a promise of something, but then where's the actual execution or the thing we can see? It's like, oh, wow, this is a great use of this technology.
And I think that is such a great example, but I do want to tease out AI from that. So blockchain is another classic example, like VR, a technology that is actually really useful, because is blockchain really? At the end of the day, you want everything to be seamless. And so there's a lot of uses of that.
Yes.
But you know, there was a lot of juxtaposing of that technology onto things and onto applications that didn't really make sense.
Correct.
They were just force fitting it. And you can't force fit like solutions onto problems that you're trying to, you can't just state a problem because you want to force fit that solution onto it. So that was what was happening with blockchain. And even I'm happy to note that blockchain is finally, after years of it having been like the sexiest girl.
Yeah, for a while.
Until she got older. I think older women are the sexiest, but that's
of course.
Yeah, of course. But conversation. But blockchain has finally started getting its due in some of the real problems and deployment of it in the right problems. AI, of course, is just much, much more viscerally applicable to many things.
I agree with that. But I also think it is another technology in some cases, even as visceral as it is, attempting to be put into a pigeonholed solution. AI is just for this, right? AI is clearly very ubiquitous now. It's no doubt. It's always been ubiquitous. Most people don't realize when you call the bank, and I call it the AI phone weave, that's what you're talking to. And so AI has always been fairly ubiquitous. It's more about now, how do we make sure that AI doesn't have those problems like VR or blockchain, even though it is very ubiquitous? Is it only there to order the McDonald's hamburger? No, but it could also be catastrophic, or it could be great, or it's probably going to land somewhere in between. But it's, again, one of those things that a lot of people are saying, these are the solutions and AI is only the solution for these things. And I agree with the visceralness of it, right? It could be multifaceted. We just don't know.
And I just doubling down on your point, Barbara, let me tell you what are the things that we got excited at Rocketship at the beginning. So there are broad classifications of an AI company. You can have three different kinds of AI companies. One is the fundamental blocks, building fundamental. And now I'm talking specifically about generative AI. So generative AI companies, which is what the exuberance and the valuations were crazy and all of that, that had three different flavors to it. One is companies trying to build the foundational LLMs and the models. The second is companies that were trying to become tools and shovels. Yes. To mine this data and to get into some way, you need toolkits and shovels to do all that.
Correct.
Third is like application AIs, and that uses the AI.
Midjourney or even ChatGPT, we can say that.
Is some, you use the underlying technologies and then you have an application that you're trying to solve with generative AI.
Yes.
Classes of companies, we were always, and investors were always interested in the application in the end. Mm-hmm. But then there was a lot of hype around even the tools and the shovels, the middle class companies, because there's a lot of money to be made. And these are usually B2B companies. And then the fundamental LLMs. The thing was, there are too many incumbents with a lot of data, like the Googles and the Metas of the world that own a lot of data. And so is there going to be a company that's going to come and win that game against these incumbents? So there was a lot of questions. Can you build fundamental foundational models at the same level and class as to what these guys can build with the amount of data that they have? Slowly, what has happened is there was just too much of money being thrown around unceremoniously on everything. Now
Correct.
I've concentrated a little bit on a few aspects. And of course, the biggest companies are going to be the ones that are foundationally doing something completely.
Of course.
The application companies are now getting a lot of attention. There's just too many applications. That's where your ubiquitousness and what is exactly, how is it differentiated? Are you just doing something with Gen AI, just retrofit it and say a Gen AI company and an application?
We have a piece of the Gen AI puzzle or something to that effect.
Exactly right. And so there's too much of noise. And I think and we have decided to be careful, but we are obviously speaking to some of the best companies in the world, and we will make bets as we see them. I think this will settle down as well. This wave and this craziness will settle down. And it's already settling.
It already is settling down. Yes, I agree. All right. So that was a massive bonus question, but we do have a real one. But this question is, so what are you currently learning or listening to or reading these days?
Yeah, I'm constantly reading a lot of books and reading a lot of, but I actually, my true love is technical papers. I love reading technical papers on some of the latest Gen AI technologies that are published on a lot of GitHubs, and there's just a lot of resources. And so I like reading some of that. It just keeps my feet wet to what's really happening, the action to the ground. I'll always fundamentally be a data scientist in my heart. Everything that I like to do and perceive is from an angle of data. And so I read a lot of that. And I've been really impressed by the quality of work. And what
so much great work all across the world. I'm glad you had said your fund is global, because you have to look across the world and go, wow, look at what's happening in all these different aspects and areas. And I think sometimes I'm semi-US centric, but I'm also advising a global fund. And sometimes when you're not, when you don't have that global lens, you're missing out on some other thinking as, oh, wow, look at how they're solving these Gen AI problems, or how they're thinking about LLMs, or how they're thinking about data and bias, or how they're thinking about their policies around these things. It becomes very powerful when you do it more in a global way.
Absolutely. And we have an investment. We are obviously invested in many different continents, almost every continent invested. We are in India, we are in Africa, we are in LATAM, we are in Southeast Asia. We are, of course, in the US and Canada and Europe. And the one thing that's a learning is that these Gen AI models have different applications in different countries with different problems. We've invested in a company that's like the Instacart of Africa, West Africa, and just phenomenal growth. And they've really cracked the quick delivery of food and groceries model. And the way they are thinking about AI to empower the problems that they are facing in Africa, for example, is very different to how somebody in India is trying to use the same technology to solve a problem there. And also the developed world, which is the US and Europe markets, they're very different. So we are seeing some of those things emerge as well as we are investing globally. And my reading is in part also motivated by problems that are being faced by the world and different parts of the world.
Oh, that's great. So here's the real bonus question. In 2 years, when we're talking, how do you see venture capital and or investing having changed or evolved?
I think that I'm not going to sort of keep on bolstering the point of data, but I will say that a lot of funds are going towards more data-driven platforms for investments. Yep. And that's definitely here to stay.
100% agree on that.
And with generative AI and things of that nature, technologies of that nature, it's even getting more and more accessible to many different funds and VCs. So I think this data and AI wave is here to stay, even for the venture capital funds and the way they do business, find companies, invest, due diligence, all of that. Globally, investing is getting to be more and more prevalent, even in hyperlocal funds. There are opportunities that you wouldn't have ever found because you don't live in that geography.
That's true.
Now that's becoming more and more prevalent and more relevant. And finally, I think that venture capital was a very old boys network a few years back. Then it became a younger play because consumer companies, it is what people use. And so that's become more and more a reality where there's just a lot of much younger people playing a very important and key role. And I think the final frontier, there's just a lot more diversity has to come to prominence. I say this with a lot of consideration, because I feel as long as you have people from different cultures, different genders play an important part in the boardrooms and in just funds and in just capital, you're not going to see a change. And that needs to happen in the LP community that gives money to the GP.
Yes.
That needs to happen in the GP community. And that also needs to happen in startup founders and boardrooms of startups. And so this is something that has to happen. And I'm really hoping will happen, because we need to diversify. And we need to diversify in a considered, thoughtful manner where all of our voices can be heard. And all intelligent voices all over the world.
There's so many intelligent voices all over the world, right? That totally makes sense what you said, because there's so many intelligent voices all over the world working on all these problems with these different viewpoints and can help solve massive. We have massive problems globally. There are people that are not eating. There are people that, like, I heard some things. I was like, this is still happening. It's 2024. I was like, this is unbelievable. There were some things I was listening to. I'm like, I can't believe this is happening, but it's happening in that country. And technology and some of these other things can help resolve some of these types of issues.
Absolutely. And so I think those are the three big changes that I see in venture capital. One is that the democratization of access via data. And the second is like this diversification in gender and other facets. And the last is the globalization of venture capital. Those are the three things that I would summarize this as. And there's going to be a huge change.
All right. So how do people contact you?
Absolutely. We are available on our website, rocketship.vc. You can see our portfolio companies, you can see our thesis, You can see information about us. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm at madhu@rocketship.vc or MS, my first and middle name, Madhu Shalini, MS@rocketship.vc. I'd love to hear from founders, from other GPs, from the community at large interested in both data and some of the other things that I love, which is global investing, and always obviously open to hearing a lot of thoughts.
Wonderful. So thank you so much, Madhu Iyer from Rocketship VC, for being my guest on the Female VC Lab podcast.
Thank you so much, Barbara.
This episode is brought to you by Trail & Ventures. Find and invest in the next billion-dollar emerging tech company. Sign up for our exclusive content at https://trailyn.com to find out more. Find us on Apple, on Spotify, and on Google Podcasts. Thank you for listening.